Hello and welcome to Unity Presbyterian Church Online. This week in worship, Pastor Dana continues the series on relationships with a look at friendship and what it means to be a godly friend. Let's listen.
As David just mentioned, we are continuing on with our series on relationships. And this week we'll be talking about friendship and more specifically, what makes someone a good friend? And what does Jesus have to say about being a good friend? This past week, I spent some time contemplating my friends. I thought about the friends that I'm closer to. And then I contemplated what really makes somebody the type of friend that you want to invest in long term for your entire life versus the type of friend that is just there for a short amount of time, a season in life. I have a group of friends that I grew up with. We went to kindergarten on up together, and they were actually bridesmaids in my wedding. There's a picture of them and my husband and I during our wedding. We have been friends for over 30 years, and throughout most of our adult lives, we have lived in different places. One of them even lives in Canada. Our life paths have taken us in very different directions, but yet we've stayed very close, and we've made it a point to meet up at least once a year. So what makes someone the type of friend that you want to invest in like that? The type of friend that you want to have close to you your entire life? Well, a quick Google search will give you all kinds of answers to those questions. Actually, Psychology Today wrote an elaborate article on this topic, and they wrote about the 13 most essential qualities and attributes of a friend. According to Psychology Today, the 13 most essential qualities are honesty, non-judgmental, loyal, trustworthy, so people can trust you, able to trust others, so you're able to trust people too, dependable, empathetic, a good listener, supportive in bad times, so not checking out when it takes a little bit of extra work to be a good friend during the difficult times, supportive in good times, so not being jealous or envious over your friend's success, self-confidence, able to see the humor in life, and fun to be around. Because everybody wants to laugh and have a good time. I think this list captures just about all the qualities that come to mind when we think of our close friends or those who we have truly invested in. And I asked our youth this past week what they thought about this. What were some of the qualities that they looked for in their friendships? And here's the list they came up with. Funny or a fun time, trustworthy, loyal, understanding, a good listener, truthful, honest, and kind. I thought that last one was very important, to be kind. The list that the youth came up with, it's very similar to the list that Psychology Today put out. And I'm sure if most of us compared our lists, they would be very similar in nature. We all look for the same types of characteristics, the same traits in our friendships that we want to invest in long term. Turning to the Gospel of John, chapter 15, verses 13 through 17, Jesus talks about friendship. In these verses, Jesus highlights how we are his friends. And then he goes on to list a couple of very important attributes. Verses 13 through 17 say, "There is no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you slaves because a master doesn't confide in his slaves. Now you are my friends since I have told you everything the Father told me. You didn't choose me, I chose you. I appointed you to go and produce lasting fruit so that the Father will give you whatever you ask for using my name. This is my command, love each other. In these verses, Jesus highlights two very important attributes of friendship. The first one is love, and the second one is for a person to lay down one's life for one's friends. And we'll explore both of those more in depth. In verse 13, Jesus says, "There's no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends." And in verse 17, he says, "This is my command, love each other." In both of these verses, Jesus uses the word love as an important attribute and an essential characteristic of friendship. When Jesus used the word love, he was referencing a very specific type of love. The Greek word that is used in both of those verses is agape. Agape refers to a selfless, unconditional love, a type of love that loves others over self, a type of love that is unconditional as it transcends and persists regardless of circumstance. It goes beyond just the emotions to the extent of seeking the best for others. This word agape, it references a self-sacrificing type of love that God possesses for all of humanity, and how as children of God, we are to possess that same type of love for God and for the rest of mankind. C.S. Lewis wrote about this word agape in his book, The Four Loves. In this book, C.S. Lewis describes agape as what he believed was the highest level of love known to humanity, a selfless love, and a love that is passionately committed to the well-being of others. This word agape shows up 106 times in the New Testament. It shows up twice in our passage from John this morning as Jesus explains what it means to be a friend and how to be a godly friend. As Jesus speaks about this topic of friendship, he highlights the necessity of an agape love being present in those relationships. And then he goes on to describe what that self-sacrificing type of love might look like. In verse 13, he says, "There's no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends." Clearly, in this verse, Jesus does not mean a literal form of laying down our lives for our friends. He doesn't mean to literally give our lives up for our friendships, but rather he means it metaphorically, where we possess a type of love for our friends that's self-sacrificing, passionately committed to the well-being of others. It's the type of love for our friends where we are willing to take on their burdens like they're our own. Now, I am an old soul, and I love oldies music, and most of the time when I am driving down the road, I am listening to music from the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s. And so when I read this verse, the old hit song, "He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother," came to mind. This song you might be familiar with. It was a hit song by the Hollies in 1969. It was also a hit in 1970 when Neil Diamond did his rendition. The song details how life is a long and winding road, and the pitfalls can be harsh for many. And so we are to help those when they need it. We're to carry our brothers when needed. Hence the song title, "He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother." The inspiration for this song dates back to 1884, when James Wells, he was the moderator for a church in Scotland, he witnessed a young girl walking down the sidewalk, and she was carrying a boy on her back that was twice her size. And so this man stopped her, and he said, "You look tired, you look like you need water, can I help you?" And she said, "No, I don't need anything. He ain't heavy. He's my brother." This story circulated, and it made its way into newspapers and magazines, and eventually it fell into the hands of a man named Father Flanagan, Father Flanagan had just opened up a children's home, a boys' home, an orphanage in Omaha, Nebraska. And as he caught wind of this story, he adopted the slogan, "He ain't heavy, he's my brother." And they erected this statue on the property with the slogan inscribed at the bottom. Father Flanagan felt that it epitomized the importance of their residents caring for each other and knowing that somebody was caring for them. All of these things, the original story of the young girl carrying her brother, the lyrics to the Hollies' hit song, the statue in Omaha, Nebraska, they all illustrate for us what it looks like to love one another in the way that Jesus talks about in our passage from John this morning. The love that Jesus wants his followers to embrace is not this abstract, philosophical concept, but rather it's the lived reality of love that's present in our lives, in our relationships, in our friendships. It's the full embodiment and expression of a type of love that helps others and serves others and is a friend to all. It's the type of love that entails carrying our brother's burdens like they're our own and adopting the slogan, "He ain't heavy, he's my brother." As you know, Pastor David and Bishop Lowry met in the sanctuary a couple weeks ago, and they had a lengthy conversation about recent events surrounding George Floyd's death and really how to address systematic racism. And those conversations were powerful, and a few parts of them touch on what we're discussing this morning, what it looks like to carry your brother's burdens like they're your own, and what Jesus truly meant when he said there is no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends. Here's a short clip of that conversation.
And believe it or not, with all of this that's going on, Sam, Patricia called me all the way from Anderson. Sam called me, and then Elaine called me. And you know, and they call, and this was their conversation. Franklin, I'm hurting. I'm upset. I'm disappointed in what's going on. And the thing that drew me in was they said, "How are you doing?" That's personal.
Yeah.
That's relational.
Yeah. Yeah.
How are you doing?
Just genuinely caring for one another.
You know, and that carries a weight. It carries a weight, but it also lightened my burden.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a touching video, and you can see how much it touched Bishop Lowry, how much it meant to receive a phone call from his friends. Bishop Lowry first shared that story with the CPJ when we were having a Zoom call. And as I listened to him tell that story, I thought, well, I know who Elaine is, and I know who Sam is. And I thought, but I don't know who Tricia is. And so I can't wait to find out who she is and to meet her, because I'm sure we would have a lot in common, and we could talk about social justice issues. And so it was a couple days later that I found out Tricia was my predecessor, that she was the associate that was here before my arrival. And so it made that story even more powerful, because Tricia doesn't even live in this community anymore. She lives in a different state. But yet, amidst all the unrest that is being experienced throughout our entire nation, she called her friend Franklin. She remembered the Denver community, and so she reached out to him. And it lightened his load. It eased his burdens in doing so. That is the epitome of agape love, the essence of what it looks like to lay down one's life for your friends. Oftentimes we think that there has to be some grandiose gesture, some elaborate answer to the problems that people face in life, when in reality, a very simple, small gesture can go a long ways. A simple gesture to let someone know that you're thinking of them, that they're not facing their battle alone, that you're hurting with them and carrying your burdens, their burdens, in your heart. Henry Nouwen, the theologian, once noted that we cannot make another person whole. We cannot repair their brokenness. But he added, we can go deep enough with them into their pain so that it might be shared. Then when pain touches pain, we can discover healing together. Sometimes the best thing we can do for our friends is simply to show up and listen. Here's a couple more clips of Pastor David and Bishop Lowry that highlight that very same thing.
We have a shared humanity.
Yes.
We are all children of God, and being able to put that in the forefront allows us then to pursue this relationship, which I'm grateful to be able to do with you and with Gold Hill. It really is just a pleasure to be able to start forming these ties.
And I think the question that you asked, what can you do? What can your congregation do? And so on and so forth. And it's not going to be a deep theological thing. But I would say become a living epistle here in our presence.
I like that.
You know, it don't have to be anything special.
Yeah.
Going on to show up or to have a conversation, dialogue. It don't have to be anything special.
Because I know, so we're predominantly a white congregation. And,
no kid.
I know.
Okay.
But that means, you know, when something gets uncomfortable, we can turn off the TV. And when it disturbs us, and when it becomes too much, we can disengage and take a deep breath and just go on with our life, which when I think of the amount of racist acts we've seen just in this last year, it holds the news cycle for a while, and then we move on. But I recognize that's not the experience for people who are Black in America, where it becomes... It is a daily experience. So what, do you have any recommendations for what a church like ours can do in response to all that we're seeing?
I do understand that there are cultural differences. And on my ride over here, I had a friend of mine who was pretty well off, and I'll never forget, he went into the mission fields, he was going to Africa, and we had this conversation, he made this statement. Frank, I know what I'm gonna do, I'm gonna take my checkbook, and I'm going over there, and I'm gonna fix everything. Because I had the revenue to do it. And when he went, and he saw and he realized that his checkbook couldn't fix it until his heart was fixed. And the things that he did, and it was so much larger. The problem was so great that you have to pick and choose where you could invest your time. That's why I say don't waste your presence. And then be satisfied, if you would, with contributing in the area that you deem necessary.
Mm.
But more than contributing, because see, you can write a check, put it in an envelope, mail it. It'll have your name on it, but there's not a face.
Mm.
And it can't talk back to me.
Right, right.
So from a financial perspective, yeah, that's a whole lot that could be done.
Mm-hmm.
But if I could go back to the movie, Time to Kill, Samuel Jackson, after everything was over, his attorney asked him a question. Says, I hope you're happy, my friend. He said, you're not my friend.
Hmm.
Said, what do you mean? He said, you don't know nothing about me. You don't know where I live. You've never been to my house. You've never been to my neighborhood. And he said, well, why did you choose me to be your attorney? He said, because you think like them.
Hmm. Yes. An example of how
mm-hmm.
it's about relationship.
Exactly.
It's got to be about relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me think of Jesus, and he was always with people in their suffering,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
where he's saying, hey, you know, mourn with those who mourn,
mm-hmm.
and carry one another's burdens, and you can only do that in relationship. You can only carry burdens if you know of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we're seeking to do as churches, forming this relationship, saying, let's be with one another in the good times and then these really hard times as well.
Well,
in our passage from John this morning, Jesus tells us what it means, what it looks like to be a good friend. He describes what it looks like to be a godly friend. And we do that by loving them with an agape love, this self-sacrificing love that truly and genuinely cares about the well-being of others. We do that by laying down our lives for our friends, by taking on their burdens as if they are our own. This week, the challenge is to think about if we truly possess those qualities, if we are that friend to others. The challenge is to think about what more we can do so that we can demonstrate an agape love, so that we can take on the burdens of others. May we be the type of friend that Jesus calls us to be. Amen.
If you would like more information about Unity Presbyterian Church, please visit our website at www.unitypres.org or visit us on Facebook. This is the Unity Presbyterian Church Podcast. Have a great week.